This is Orson Welles, speaking from London.
To keep you in suspense.
Tired of the everyday grind.
Night transmissions. Hello. Welcome to Night Transmissions. This is Gary Clinton, your genial host, or, well, sometimes not so genial, occasionally downright reluctant. But not today. Today I'm glad to be here and want to talk for just a very short time about the CBS Mystery Theater, which was an ambitious effort by the veteran radio producer Hyman Brown to revive interest in American radio drama. So every night, from 1974 to 1982, host E.G. Marshall and later Tammy Grimes would open up that creaking door for 52 minutes of fear you can hear. Brown produced nearly 200 new episodes of Mystery Theater every year, for which he brought both original scripts and adaptations of classic stories by Edgar Allan Poe, Mark Twain, Louis Stevenson, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and brought many of the golden age of radio performers back in front of the mic. People like Agnes Moorehead, Richard Widmark, Celeste Holm, and Mercedes McCambridge, as well as a number of up-and-coming performers of the 70s and 80s, Tony Roberts, John Lithgow, Morgan Fairchild, Mandy Patinkin, Sarah Jessica Parker, all performed at the Mystery Theater. The show would win the Peabody Award for 1974. After 8 years and 1,340 shows, the show ended its run on December 30th of 1982 and was inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame in 1990. Here's the thing, though. Hyman Brown died recently at the age of nearly 100. I'm too lazy to look it up right now, but he was right around 100. His granddaughter, Melinda, has said that it was not her grandfather's desire that the CBS Mystery Radio Theater be released into the public domain. I thought it had already been. They're all over the internet. People are selling large compilations of them. I thought they were in the public domain. Well, but I never knew. I wasn't at all sure. I know that there's a lot of stuff out there on the internet that is not in the public domain, but seem to be orphaned, and nobody's paying attention that they're being used. This has really been the case with the CBS Mystery Theater. The family has to know that these recordings are all over the place, and has turned a blind eye, and continues to turn a blind eye to that. I guess that they're not releasing them into the actual public domain to defend their copyright. If you don't defend your copyright, you do lose it, and you lose it well before the requisite 50 years after the copyright holder's death. So what do I do? Do I continue to play these? I think so. You know, it would be nice to have the pristine copies, the pristine recordings that the family is said to have in their vault. But I'm sympathetic. They don't want to release them. They don't want to release them. As I said earlier, though, the family's really done nothing to discourage the presentation of these admittedly quite poor quality recordings that are floating around the internet. So, unless I get some sort of a notice to cease and desist, I think I'll continue to play them. Today's episode is called The Permanent Man. It is from April the 19th of 1979. Enjoy it while you can. Oh, another thing. With a little bit of subsequent research, I've discovered that the term of automatic copyright continuation after the creator's death is not 50 years, it's 70 years. My apologies.
CBS News, the gas bubble is dissipating at the Harrisburg nuclear site. This is Reed Collins reporting on the CBS Radio Network. It is showing dramatic decreases in size. That phrase from a federal nuclear official gave Pennsylvanians a lift today. The hydrogen bubble, which had interfered with the efforts to cool down the nuclear reactor, has diminished and temperatures near the core are reported reducing. Energy Chief James Schlesinger was asked about the situation following some testimony today on Capitol Hill. Nelson Benton has the story.
Energy Secretary Schlesinger rejected as premature demands by some that nuclear reactors similar in design to the one at Three Mile Island be shut down for technical study. Schlesinger spoke with reporters at the Capitol about the Pennsylvania nuclear accident.
The problem at the moment seems to be on its way to resolution. The core is cooling. The gas bubble is being reduced. I think that all of us should withhold judgment until we have had the opportunity to look at this incident in the light of total experience.
Schlesinger said he expects President Carter to disclose new administration energy policies this week, possibly in a nationally broadcast address. Nelson Benton, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
News continues after this.
Denture wearers, if you're tired of switching from paste to powders and back again, try something different. Ezo denture cushions. Unlike paste and powders, Ezo cushions are a soft, pliable, all-natural product that form a cushion between gums and dentures. They don't dissolve like paste or powders, so they hold all day without afternoon slippage. And Ezo denture cushions leave no bad taste or odor. For temporary relief until you see your dentist, try Ezo denture cushions. That's Ezo, E-Z-O.
When you have a lot of surfaces to clean, grab your partner, Fantastic, the multi-surface spray cleaner. It cleans fiberglass, stainless steel, porcelain, plastic, enamel, vinyl. Fantastic spray cleaner. Clean surface after surface.
Republican efforts to cool down federal spending collapsed today in the House of Representatives. Treasury Secretary Blumenthal wrote a letter to the House Speaker warning that some $8 billion worth of Social Security checks already in the mail would bounce unless Congress approved a new and higher debt ceiling and did it right away. Treasury sources also were saying that Blumenthal had ordered a halt to the mailing of the income tax refund checks. The House, faced with the possibility of a mini-default by Uncle Sam, quickly abandoned the argument over balanced budgets and sent the ceiling razor to the president's desk. With the Teamsters and the truckers at odds, thousands of auto workers are being put on short shift. At GM and Ford plants, an estimated 48,000 assembly line workers were sent home early today. The truckers began shutting down when the Teamsters announced they would strike the firms selectively. Fire destroyed a boarding house in Farmington, Missouri today, and authorities say at least 25 people were killed. The dead included some elderly and some mental outpatients from a nearby state hospital. A fire official says the roof of the place collapsed, trapping many of those in their nightclothes. 9 persons had died in a boarding house fire in Connellsville, Pennsylvania, and most of these victims were elderly. Several persons, 4 of them policemen, were in intensive care in Dayton, Ohio today after a prisoner in the jail set fire to a padded cell, padded with a plastic-coated material that filled the place with smoke. Tanzanian planes bombed Ugandan targets again today, and reportedly they hit the industrial city of Jinja, causing panic there. Reports from the area say President Amin entered Jinja shortly after the bombing, calmed the residents down, and declared that that will be the place for his last stand. More news in a minute.
I'm confused. What do doctors recommend for pain today?
Doctors' number one choice is the pain reliever in Anacin.
Doctors' number one choice?
A recent report shows the ingredient in Anacin was recommended 5 million times last year for pain of headache, backache, minor arthritis, and muscle aches. Anacin is strong, a combination of medical ingredients, free of stomach upset for millions.
So the ingredient in Anacin is the doctor's choice.
Doctor's number one choice. Get Anacin. Use only as directed.
Boy, I love beef ravioli. Chef Boyardee beef ravioli.
It's a real Italian meal with taste appeal for all your family.
Why do I love it? Because my whole family loves Chef Boyardee beef ravioli, delicious meat-filled macaroni pies, smothered in a rich tomato sauce. It's still less than 35 cents a serving when I buy a large-size can from Chef Boyardee.
Oh, boy!
On Wall Street now, the Dow Industrial Average is down 7.54, the volume 24.5 million shares. Atlantis, the lost city, has been found once again. A Russian scientist says it's right where Plato said it was, west of Gibraltar, out in the Atlantic Ocean. There are flat-topped mountains 300 to 600 feet below the surface. This according to the professor Aksyonov, and among them are ruins which he claims a Soviet research vessel has taken pictures of. The professor is writing in a Russian magazine. He himself now said to be out on the scene west of Gibraltar, exploring what he says could be Atlantis. Reed Collins, CBS News.
Presents. Creature he is, whether he is placed or misplaced in the centuries past, present or future, is no assurance he gets smarter or better. The fact that our story takes place upon some man-inhabited planet is no guarantee of brotherly love or peace. In fact, though his planetary address may have changed, man has not. So, beware.
Victor, how long are we going on like this?
What are you talking about?
You have shut yourself up in that laboratory. You've given up all your other patients.
That's my business, isn't it?
It's no life for me, Victor. We're never together anymore. All I do is bring you pounds and pounds of baby food 3 times a day. We could feed an entire nursery on that amount. I want to know, what have you got in that laboratory?
Mystery drama, The Permanent Man, adapted from a tale by William Morrow, especially for Mystery Theater by Gerald Keane, stars Robert Dryden. It is sponsored in part by Contact, the 12-hour cold capsule. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
At the drugstore, they told me there's a powerful anti-itch drug I can buy without a doctor's prescription. Now I use Bicozine cream as directed. No more burning, embarrassing itching. No more scratching. Bicozine actually speeds healing. Bicozine cream. What a relief.
Now you can soften hard, calloused skin without painful cutting or scraping. Apply stainless Dermasoft cream to your feet as directed. Insist on Dermasoft cream.
Join the fun at Olympic Adventure, the world's largest amusement park. Put the kids on the world's biggest Ferris wheel.
Reed Amusement Park, the novel that takes you into the beds and boardrooms of those men and women whose manipulations turn a day's fun into a nightmare of death. Read Amusement Park by Robert Stewart Nathan and get set for the ride of your life. Amusement Park, now in paperback from Fawcett.
Take a walk down the long aisles of the huge Applejack store out west. It's mind-boggling and eye-goggling to see section after section of wines from every point on the globe. Nowhere And really nowhere in the Rocky Mountain area will you find the selection offered at Applejack. And this week, Applejack Liquors will receive the largest single shipment of wine from any vineyard in the world to any single retailer. 5 semi-truckloads. These are famous Sebastiani wines. On sale this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And only a volume buy of this magnitude can offer you such a large savings. Check Thursday's Rocky Mountain News or Denver Post for a list of varieties and prices. Then put a bottle of California history on your Easter dinner table with Sebastiani from Applejack. A quality and portions. Out west at 32nd and Lungfield, just off I-70 at exit 264. The special Sebastiani sample passes Saturday.
It is a lunar year, 2120, in a small colony of men living on Neptune. As everyone knows, oxygenated life on Neptune is only possible inside a geodesic dome. And indeed, that was preferable to those early days when Dr. Vigo first arrived and all the dome plates were not yet in place. And everyone had to wear spacesuits carrying their own life support systems. Doc Vigo had arrived on a shuttle in 2099. And let me tell you, the Neptunians were glad to see him. In fact, they had built him his own dwelling right near the spaceport, where everybody and anybody with stellar ills could get to see him.
Next.
Are you the security police?
That's what the sign says. Your papers, please. All in order. You're on the 0300 to Venus?
Yes, sir.
Have you had clearance from Dr. Vigo?
Clearance?
Health check. What did you say your name was?
Oh, it's, Tech. T-E-C-H.
I don't see a doctor's check off here.
Well, I have the district overchief's signature. Isn't that enough?
Oh, yes, so you have. I didn't turn the page. Your flight leaves at 0300. Here's that manifest. 25 males, 25 females. You know this is a space probe for the genetic thin air colony.
Probe? Well, the overchief told me the dome was in place. You're ready for colonization.
Well, have a good trip.
Excuse me, I just thought of something.
What's your problem, Kent?
This, Dr. Vigo, I've never met him. Does he live far?
Check the sentry outside. He'll direct you.
My name is Tech.
Face the lens. Don't turn away.
I'd like to see Dr. Vigo.
What about? You don't look sick.
Well, it's a little hard to explain being outside and talking into a camera lens in the door.
I can't take any more charity patients this month.
Well, I'm not asking for charity. I have 300 credits in my account.
Well, why didn't you say so? Just a minute. I'm Vigo. Did you say 300 credits?
Yes, sir.
Young man like you? Why, even on Earth, I could only earn 20 credits a year, and I'm a specialist in nuclear medicine.
Well, it's 300 credits. I inherited them.
Well, now, don't stand there. Come in. Follow me into the laboratory. My wife's taking a nap in the consulting room, and I don't wish to disturb her. You first.
Uh-huh.
Turn sharp left here. It's tricky, huh? Now, right. Now, hold it. Press that red button to the right of the steel door.
Well, doctor, it's your house. Why don't you press the button?
Because when a patient comes to see me, I stand behind him. I don't know you. You first. Press the button firmly. Chair you see facing the marble desk and sit down.
Uh-huh.
Right. Hey, excuse me while I take a look at this scope.
What is it?
It's an adaptation of the heat sink installations.
Well, what does it show you?
That you're not armed.
Doctor, don't you trust me?
Neptune, I don't trust anybody. Well, you're clear, so I suppose we find out what's troubling you.
Doctor, I'm 25 years old. I was born on Neptune, and I shall die on Neptune.
No doubt. Unless you'd like to get into the Mars or Venus colonizations, the dying here is more civilized, I'm told.
You're joking with me, but I'm serious. I don't think I have long to live.
What did you say your name was?
Tech.
I'll tell you something, Tech. 75% of my patients also believe death is around the corner. Mom and wife, same thing. It's due to the rationing of oxygen inside the dome. It's affected many people here. But you've got to fight it. Things will get better. You'll adapt. Already they've clamped down on immigration, so there'll be more oxygen for those of us who live here. I can give you some medication to heighten your awareness and desire to go on from day to day.
But I don't want that, Doctor.
You wish to die.
We're all going to, isn't that so? Someday. So I've decided the most rational thing to do is to give my body to science.
When did you decide that?
Oh, I've had it in my mind for some time. It's not a hasty thought.
It's a noble thought, Take. But if you just fill out this form and have it notarized and put through the interstellar biorecording channels, when I get it back cleared, I'll put it in the files. When your time comes, it's all automatic. Science will get your corpus.
But you don't understand, Doctor. I wish to donate my body to science now.
You wish me to kill you?
Yes.
I have no patience with that nonsense. If you're serious and wish to do away with yourself, go do it by yourself. Put on a suit, head for the airlock, leave the dome, open the suit, and let the atmosphere squash you flat. Now, will you please go?
I didn't mean to make you angry, Doctor.
You've taken up enough of my time and insulted me to boot. If you please, the way out is the way you came in.
But, Dr. Vigo, don't dismiss me until you've had a chance to hear me out. Now, isn't it more valuable for medical research to have a healthy young specimen for examination and teaching than a decayed, aged corpse?
Tech, you're simply foolish. You think you're in trouble. Life has no meaning. I don't want to know what it is.
Well, Doctor, wouldn't my body, dead or alive, help blaze a trail?
Did you say dead or alive?
Oh, why not? A human guinea pig.
You're insane. You better surrender yourself to the authorities and be sent to an asylum for treatment.
Doctor, I've heard about you. You think I came to you by accident? I could have taken the shuttle to Johns Hopkins or the Lenin Institute and made them the same offer.
No, why didn't you?
If I'm handing over my body for research, I want it to be new research. New trails, as you put it. Not some tired old experiments on DNA or longevity or prenatal determination. If I know you've been doing analysis and verification on humans. Well, experiment on me. But why does your conscience bother you now?
That's a good question, Tech. I have never denied there's some research which can only be conducted while the subject remains alive and conscious.
But that's not what I want. You can keep my heart beating or my organs functioning. If I say yes, that's up to you. But I will only hand over what is mine to give. My mind, if you can guarantee I will no longer be able to think or to remember. No thinking. No memory.
What is it you wish to forget?
There's nothing on Neptune I wish to remember. You see, all my life, I wanted to be a priest, to devote myself to God's work, and that's been denied me. I was born at the wrong time, too late. 900 years ago, I might have joined the Crusades. I was born into this world of scientific know-how. No room for the spirit, no room for miracles or devotion to a deity. So, I hope that if my brain no longer has to deal with insignificant man, perhaps God will rescue me and take me to a world no rocket can reach. Doctor, I'm willing to take that chance.
Does anyone know you came here?
No, Doctor.
You swear it?
Yes.
But your prolonged absence will cause alarm and lead to a search for you.
I've provided against that.
Oh? How?
I signed up for the new genetic thin air colony. You see, they don't check you off when you enter the space cruiser. I've already been cleared.
Oh, there's the cruiser.
Was it 0300?
Yes, it is.
Well, there's your answer. Whoever I know thinks I'm on it.
This is one of the disadvantages of living so close to the spaceport. But my wife and I weren't about to look a gift house in the mouth. So, no one knows you're still here on Neptune, eh? Who is going?
25 females, 25 males. Now there'll be one short.
Where did you say they were headed for?
Well, Venus, where else? I shan't be missed there. Or here.
Tell me, how's your heart? No, don't tell me, you wouldn't know. Lie down on that couch and we'll soon find out. Give me your wrist.
Are you taking my call?
Be quiet. 5, 6, 7, and 8. Fine. 85. Quite good.
How did you figure that?
Count for 6 seconds and multiply by 10. Good, strong pulse. Have you ever had any heart irregularities?
Well, none that I know of. But I don't understand the question. I mean, if you're going...
I don't wish to inflict any unnecessary pain. Now, take. Before I begin, think again. Coldly, calmly, dispassionately. You have absolutely no desire to change your mind?
None whatsoever. What's that liquid you're pouring in that glass?
The first liquid you must drink. Dick, you've asked me to rid your mind of its present state. You've told me if it means death, you don't care. But you won't die, I can promise you that. All right, here, drink it down.
Thank you. What if I swallow that? How long will it take to have an effect?
10 minutes.
You have reached down from your seat with the gods, Doctor, and have lifted me up to glorious peace and rest.
Close your eyes, young man.
If you only knew how I have prayed for this moment.
But I'm not offering you death, you know that.
You are giving me the end of this mechanized horror we call the 21st century.
No, I'm not promising you that either. The facts of life on Neptune won't change, only your awareness.
To stop knowing, being aware.
Tech, your body now belongs to science.
What shall I be used for?
You will be the first human ever to undergo a brain transplant.
Life-taking or life-giving? Hippocrates, the first doctor who wrote the code for medical practice in 400 B.C., also wrote, "From the brain, and from the brain only, arise our pleasures, joys, laughter, and jests." as well as our sorrows, pains, griefs, and tears. Keck, the 25-year-old 21st century man, can no longer burden his brain with struggles and unhappiness, and soon shall know them no more. I shall be back shortly with Act Two.
I wouldn't get carried away or anything, but this is our first break. I promise not to be too annoying or anything.
Chocolate flavored Bosco is mighty good for me. Mama puts it in my milk for extra energy. Bosco gives me iron and sunshine
vitamin D. Oh, I love Bosco. Let's drink for me. We are revealing life in the year 2120. Under a crystal plexiglass dome rising 700 feet at its peak. Outside, on this inhospitable planet Neptune, it is cold and nitrogen-laden. Inside the dome city, there is warm and breathable air. A city of buildings, of young people, and of dreams. Like those of Tech, the young man in Dr. Vigo's laboratory, relinquishing his tomorrows.
Delicious. I feel it going.
Doctor?
Reflexes weakening.
Doctor?
Eyesight going. Can you feel my hand on your arm, Tech? I'm gripping your arm tightly.
Feel?
Numb. Extremities are numb.
Doctor!
Past hearing. Can you hear me snapping my fingers at your ear? Tech, can you? Hearing's gone.
Dripping.
I'm in here. I'm busy.
Victor, please come out. I'm worried.
What is it, Vivian?
Victor, don't make me stand out here in the hall. Let me come in and sit down. I'm so tired.
Now, you know no one has admitted into my laboratory.
Why am I always so tired?
Because you haven't adapted. Because you don't do the prescribed exercises. You don't do one thing to help strengthen your lungs.
Don't be angry, Victor, please.
Fine example you set to the wife of the doctor. I keep making excuses for you all the time. Now go away and let me get back to work.
Victor, I had this terrible dream. I woke up with this ominous dread. Did someone come in?
Someone? In here? In the house?
Could it have been my dream? But I heard...
What did you hear?
I thought I heard someone in the house just now. I don't know. I was sure I heard footsteps. Walking up the stairs. Two people. Yourself and someone else.
Vivian, I'm shutting this door. I do not wish to be disturbed. If the security people call and they need me, tell them not today. I can't see anyone today. I don't care how many space travelers need health clearances. Understand?
Oh, yes, dear.
You'd better go to bed. You are dead on your feet.
You're waiting to see me, Mrs. Vigo?
Yes, sir. Are you the security police for this district?
Yes. What's on your mind?
May I talk to you? Privately.
This is a little difficult for me, and I...
All right, Mrs. Vigo. This way to my office. Please do seat yourself. Does Dr. Vigo know you're here?
That's just the point, sir. He doesn't.
Oh?
Can I ask you, sir, what I'm going to tell you? That you'll keep it confidential?
You have my word.
If the doctor ever found out that I'd come here to the security police, I mean, his own wife...
You have my word, Mrs. Vigo. But why, I don't understand.
I suppose I ought to know better, to trust what he does completely, but what's been going on in our house for weeks now, in his laboratory? It's so horrible. I'm afraid to live under the same roof any longer.
Vivian, where's our dinner? I mean, my dinner.
I'm coming. The steps get harder every day.
Just hand me the tray as you always do.
Here. Oh, so much food, I could barely carry it. But nothing spilled.
Thank you. Breakfast at the usual time. Good night.
Victor?
Yes? Now what is it?
Victor, how long are we going to go on like this?
What are you talking about?
You have shut yourself up in there for 2 months now. You've given up all your other patients. You don't give health clearances anymore.
That's my business, isn't it?
Victor, it's no life. It's certainly no life for me. You've moved into the laboratory. We're never together. I've never seen so much food as I bring up here every day. Baby food. Nothing but baby food and sandwiches for you. We could feed a whole nursery of babies on what I carry up here.
Are you quite finished with your complaints? Don't you think my animals eat? That's what experimental surgery is all about. You've got to keep them fed and healthy.
But I never hear them bark anymore. Victor, there's something going on in there. And I wish you'd level with me.
There's nothing going on in my laboratory, so go away. And the next time I ring the bell, I'll expect all the food that's ordered. Good night. Here we are, my dear Tech. Spinach and carrots and... No, let's see what's in this dish. Oh, you like this. Oh, nice hot sweet potatoes all mashed up so they'll go down easily. Oh, my dear Tech, I know it's annoying for you to be tied down so, but it's for both our sakes. I'll have to tie down your arms if you carry on like that. Now put them down at your sides. There's a good boy. Now, we'll just open up this nutrition hatch in your neck. And there goes your food. Good, isn't it? The beginning of the fourth month, and I'm very pleased with Tech. When I failed with removing the cerebrum from the dogs, I have succeeded with the human. The dogs became idiotic, but retained their physical senses to some degree. But with Tech, an opportunity of a lifetime, and I have succeeded. Opportunity of a lifetime, and I've succeeded. Miss Vigo, you say these are your husband's actual notes?
Yes, they are, sir. He had to go out in a hurry this morning, and he didn't lock the door to his office. If it weren't that I was so frightened, I wouldn't have brought them here.
Well, where did the doctor have to go this morning?
There was a call coming in from Calypso 6. He said he wouldn't be back for a few hours. Please, can you read it and tell me what it means?
I'll try. In this cerebrum, the intellect and the affections, in the cerebellum, the senses and the motor forces, in the medulla oblongata, control of the diaphragm. Well, Mrs. Regal, this is all very technical, medical stuff. It certainly doesn't appear to me that anything strange is going on. Okay, I suggest you go home, put your husband's notes back where you found them, and forget all about this.
He's had a big steel door put in outside the laboratory. The windows where the dogs were kept are all boarded up, and I don't hear them bark anymore. Something he doesn't want me to know about is going on.
Well, I don't doubt it, Mrs. Vigo. Washington wouldn't be calling him when Calypso was sick if his work was to be general knowledge. Well, excuse me. Yes, hello, District Chief George speaking.
District Chief, this is Dr. Vigo.
Just a moment. It's your husband, Mrs. Vigo.
How did he know I was here? What can I do?
Now, calm yourself. He doesn't know you're here. He won't see you on the picture phone. I won't switch on the resident lens. Now, sit quietly. Yes, Dr. Vigo.
Are we alone?
Well, if you mean just you and I talking, why, yes.
Has there been any report into your district office in the past hour about my wife?
Your wife, Dr. Vigo? Why should there be?
I'm at the Earth Consul's. I've been here all morning. We're waiting for a call through on Calypso 6. I've activated the receivers at my house, but there's no answer.
Was that so unusual, Doctor? Couldn't your wife have just gone out?
That's just the point. She never goes out.
No, we haven't had any report on her.
Well, the reason I was so concerned about my wife is that, I fear she is losing her reason. She imagines things. And I wouldn't want her wandering about the colony, you understand? She might do herself some damage.
Travel of planets connected by jet shuttles and interplanetary ferries, there comes a point where mechanisms are shut down and man prevails. Life as we are picturing it may one day exist in the remote regions of distant galaxies, yet the human element will always remain. Man is man, with the same wisdom and the same failings, telling the same truths and the same lies. What a strange society it is, this colony on the planet Neptune, bounded by plexiglass, half a globe encasing 10 round miles. Picture it, the tallest structure on an airstrip outside the sphere, a tail-standing spaceship, 300 feet high, dwarfing humans around it. And there are always humans, always a finger to activate a solenoid, a voice to activate a switch, an eye to read a scope, if they remain sane enough.
I heard what my husband said, but I don't think you believe him either. He said he doubted my sanity.
Well, now, he didn't put it quite that way.
Don't you see why he said it? Just in case I might be telling people what I know about his work as I'm telling you.
Now, these papers you took this morning from your husband's laboratory, is he going to miss them?
I hope not.
And you're quite convinced Dr. Vigo is no longer confining himself to experiments with animals, that somehow he has, let's call it a human guinea pig.
I don't know if it's human. It eats and eats. It makes terrifying noises.
But he won't let you see what he's doing.
Oh, no. My husband gets very angry when I bring up the food trays if I stand in the door too long.
Mm-hmm. And he just said, you heard him, that you are imagining things, Mrs. Beagle.
Vivian, where are you? Vivian, I'm back.
Oh, look at the time, 6 o'clock. Where is she? I better hustle up some food for take, or I'm in deep trouble. What's in this pot on the stove? Looks like some sort of cereal. Oatmeal, maybe. Well, take, it's oatmeal for your supper, old boy. Don't blame me. Which burner is it? She's back. Stupid, forgot her key. Coming!
Just here, Vigo.
Who are you?
Well, we spoke a few hours ago, District Chief George.
Oh, yes, yes, come on in. I thought you were my wife.
Well, it's about your wife I've come to see you, Doctor. You know, part of my job is to smooth troubled waters, especially if they concern our important colonists.
You found her?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we're holding her right now.
Yeah, but I need her here. I'd better get her. No, I can't leave right now. Would you please bring her along?
Doctor, we're inclined to agree with you. Your wife does talk a little irrationally.
Yes, I know that. I told you that. But right now, I need her here.
Well, I was going to recommend... Does Mrs. Vigo have any relatives on Earth?
You mean still alive? I don't know. I think so.
Well, I was going to recommend... Dr. Vigo, do you smell something burning?
Great galaxies, it's the oatmeal. Tech, I want you to know that I'm very pleased with your progress. You're becoming stronger every day without the encumbrance of a mind. It's the mind that defeats man. Oh, you agree. I admit I haven't done a perfect job on you. The nutrition hatch is imperfect. I know you're getting air into your stomach, and that causes discomfort. I'm going to replace it with some kind of valve. But the silver vent pipe to your lungs works fine. And you're getting to make intelligible words by breathing air through it. Now, just try to speak more clearly. More clearly. Understand, Tech? Excellent. I knew you'd master speaking. Purely a matter of sound vibrations and resonance. That metal plate on your chest is your ears. A diaphragm which vibrates to all sounds, voices included.
Hungry.
You're still hungry? I've given you plenty to eat. No more until morning.
Hey,
what are you doing? Let go of me. Put your arms down, you big ox.
Let go of me.
You're squeezing the breath out of me. Stop!
Victor? Victor, where are you?
The lights all switched off in the front hall. So that's better. Why is the house so dark?
Victor? Are you upstairs?
Probably in the laboratory with all the doors closed.
Victor? I'm coming up. Victor? Is that you on the landing? Victor, what is it? Why are you lying there? What happened to you?
Oh, my poor darling. How do you feel now?
I'm all right. I must have fainted or something.
You're overworking, that's why.
Vivian, will you promise me something?
Anything. Oh, Victor... Do you realize this is the first conversation you and I have had together in months?
It wasn't about bringing food to the laboratory.
And you won't tell a soul until I'm ready?
I promise.
What time is it?
Midnight.
I think he's asleep by now. I'm going to show you something, Vivian.
What is it? It's so dark in here, I can't see anything.
No, I don't want to turn on the lights. He's very susceptible to radiation changes, and even the low level of amperage into a lamp would disturb him.
Him?
Try and adjust your eyes to the dark.
What is it? Is it alive?
Very much so.
I see it. No, it is a giant. He's sitting in a huge chair, covered in a blanket.
I had the chair specially made. It's iron and bolted to the floor.
Does he... I don't see... Is his head bent over?
He has no head. Not the kind that you would recognize.
But why, Victor? Why?
It is the human mind that controls the body. The aging process, the survival process. I have done away with those limitations. I've done a transplant.
But what have you put where the head is?
Vivian, come closer. Now can you see what I've done?
Oh, the poor creature. But why? Why? What's the good of it?
Tech is twice the size of an ordinary man. You are looking at a boon to mankind.
But that thing up there where his neck was...
Ah, hair, ears, cheeks, nose, mouth, they're all useless appendages. They stop up, they sag, they interfere. Hearing and sight are not necessary. Tech can tell everything, respond and obey by reacting to vibrations. He can be ordered, he will fulfill... Now, he won't hurt you, Vivian. In fact, I think he likes you.
He's so enormous. It's so frightening.
He won't wait now. He keeps eating and growing, and he needs his sleep. I'm going to light this kerosene lamp. Electrical current wakes him, but fire does not. I'm holding it high. Hear that? Can you hear him?
What is he doing?
Breathing through a tube. Now you can see his head plainly.
It's... No! No, a round metal ball on top of his shoulders. And that's all.
My research and discovery. The silver tube on his right is what he's breathing through. And here, on the left, the nutrition hatch leading to his stomach.
Those gigantic arms and fingers. Was he a real person once?
He was Tech. A young man who came to see me 6 months ago, unable to bear his thoughts, unable to live in a scientific world.
Victor, let me go now. I can't bear to look at him anymore. What use is such a monster?
Didn't I tell you, Vivian? Tech, my own Tech. If he is housed and fed, he could live forever. Tech has an insatiable hunger. He can no longer stand erect in the laboratory, but must hunch over. 11 feet high, 5 feet across. A living machine.
I don't know how to stop the growing process. If I cut down on his food, he rampages around and is almost uncontrollable. Tomorrow, I shall put in a cold call to Washington on Calypso 6 to tell them that I have created the permanent man.
Victor?
Yes, it's me. I'm just leaving for the Earth Council.
Victor, I don't want to stay in the house alone with it. Let me come with you.
You can't. If something should happen, someone has to give the alarm. But besides, you have nothing to fear from Tech. Tech reacts through vibrations. All these months, as he's been growing, it's you who have brought him his trays of food. He cares for you.
Don't say it.
I swear to you, he would never, never hurt you.
All right. Before you go out, Victor, take me up to the laboratory. I want to see for myself.
Good morning, Tech. I brought you Vivian.
Good morning.
His talking is getting so much better. How are you this morning, Tech?
Very sleepy. Good. Good.
Go on over to him.
Hello, Tech. Good Tech. He's putting his arms around me. It's like being folded in into a rug.
I told you he wouldn't hurt you.
He is very gentle, sort of cuddling me. Why is he pointing to his head sphere?
Trying to tell us something. Yes, Vivian has a head and you have a head. Now put your hands down.
Goodbye, Tech. I'll visit you again.
You head piece by head good. You too.
I think he wants me to have a head like his. That's what he's trying to tell us.
Yes. Why, yes. That never occurred to me. He's very fond of you, dear.
Victor, why are you locking the door?
Sit down, my dear, and let's talk.
Space Age of Horizons Unlimited began over 20 years ago in October 1957, when the Russian Sputnik orbited the Earth. Since then, landing on the moon and probes into infinite space. Life on Neptune is no more improbable than the predicted landings on Mars and Venus, but always by man, bringing with him ambition and failure. Separating fantasy from fact becomes thinner and shorter with every passing year. Man is constantly chinning himself on his own dreams, trying to outrun, outdo himself, avoiding death, seeking permanence. What he will do in the worlds beyond is beyond imagining. In the meantime, we of Mystery Theater will try to guess. Our cast included Robert Dryden, Terry Keane, and Russell Horton. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Okay, we got a little bit of a break here. Be right back. Up next is an Australian import that doesn't sound particularly Australian, but it was produced in Australia by Grace Gibson Productions. It's called The Clock, and it was a 30-minute series featuring stories of suspense and mystery, with the introduction to each show always being the same.
Sunrise and sunset, promise and fulfillment, birth and death. The whole drama of life is written in the sands of time.
The show debuted on November the 3rd of 1946 and would run for a bit more than a year, closing out on May the 23rd of 1948 for a total of 65 shows. 65 shows produced by Grace Gibson and in Australia. The actors and actresses spoke without a perceptible Australian accent, which caused the program to sound so American that when Grace Gibson decided to cease production, ABC, who had been carrying the show, decided that they would produce 13 more with an entire American cast. The show isn't one of those. This is one of Grace Gibson's programs. It's called Only Death is Timeless, and it is from May the 11th of 1947.
Sunrise and sunset, promise and fulfillment, birth and death. The whole drama of life is written in the sands of time.
We present a new series of radio programs, The Clock.
Time moves slowly, but its power is great. There is nothing material on this earth that can escape its effects. The mighty Colosseum in the city of Rome was a magnificent colossus 2,000 years ago. Today its glory is dimmed, and on some future tomorrow, even these impressive ruins will be less than dust. The very surface of this planet can be changed in the course of time, and life itself falls within the boundaries of a certain number of years. Yes, everything in the universe which is familiar to us is affected by the ticking of the clock, with one exception. Only death is timeless.
Hello? Hello? I'm still on the wire. Would you hurry with that call, please? It's an emergency. Thank you. Yes, I'd appreciate it.
Hasn't he got through, Martin?
Not yet, darling. There was a storm about 100 miles west of here. Some of the lines are down. They're redirecting the call through St. Joseph.
Oh, something awful must have happened, or they wouldn't have wired. I'm so frightened,
darling,
Martin.
Take it easy. It may not be anything. Oh, hello? Hello? Yes. Yes, this is Mr. Gaines. Who's this? Oh, I see. Is it serious? Yes, yes, we'll get plane reservations immediately. With any luck, we'll be home in 5 or 6 hours. Yeah, that's... Doctor, anything that you can do with... well, no expenses to be... Yeah. Of course. Thank you. Goodbye, Doctor.
What is it, Martin? Tell me.
Billy.
What's happened to him?
He was injured at school.
Badly?
They don't know yet.
Martin?
No, Flo, darling, look, we can't afford to get hysterical. Billy's a very strong boy. He'll be all right.
We've got to get home immediately.
We'll leave the car here and take a plane. We'll go down to the lobby now and get the first flight out.
Martin?
Yes.
Is our boy going to die? Tell me the truth.
Darling, we've just got to hope for the best, that's all.
I'm sorry, Mr. Gale, but it's impossible.
Can't you understand? This is an emergency. We've got to get plane seats.
But there are no planes taking off.
Well, none at all.
They've all been grounded between here and St. George. The weather's pretty bad a little further south.
Oh, what about trains?
Yes.
Well, the next train I'll leave at 9 tomorrow morning.
But that means we wouldn't get home until late tomorrow afternoon.
I'm sorry.
What can we do, Martin?
We'll drive, darling. That's what we'll do. If we drive all night and the roads are good, we'll be home at dawn.
That might be the best idea, sir, particularly if you know the route. There's a shortcut through the mountains that may save you a great deal of time.
Well, we came in from the coast. Do you have a map showing us that shortcut?
I'll get one for you, sir, from the porter.
Martin, they told us to avoid the mountain. They said the roads were bad and we'd certainly get lost.
Darling, what else can we do?
I beg your pardon.
What?
I couldn't help overhearing your conversation. Do you intend driving north through the mountain road tonight?
Why, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I happen to be going in the same direction, and I'm in the same position as you are. I can't wait for a train, you see. I was wondering if you'd mind giving me a lift.
Well, I'm
a... I'm familiar with the roads, Mr. Gaines. I can get you to your destination without a moment's unnecessary delay.
Oh, well, are you sure you know the way, Miss...
Crocker. Mrs. Crocker. Yes, I know every inch of the highway. I've been over it many times.
Oh, fine. Well, and by all means, come along. We'll be glad to have you.
Thank you. I'll wait for you in the front of the hotel.
Fine. Darling, that's a break for it.
Martin? How did she happen to know our name?
Yes, yeah, she did, didn't she? That's odd. Oh, well, she might have heard someone play this in the lobby.
Here's your map, sir. I've marked the best route in pencil, but you have to be very careful. Roads are tricky.
Thank you very much. I think we'll be all right. Mrs. Crocker is coming along with us. She seems to know the way.
Mrs. Crocker?
She appeared to be staying at the
same time. Woman walked out just a minute ago with the overnight bag.
There must be some mistake, Mr. Gaines. There's no one registered here named Crocker.
We're going to be taking a chance, Martin.
Darling, she seems respectable enough. She may have come here from another hotel to get plane reservation.
Oh, well, I guess it's all right.
Of course it is, darling. The bellboy put bags in the car, dear.
Where is Mrs. Crocker?
I think she said she'd wait here in front of the door.
Martin, there's someone sitting in our car.
What? Ah, it's Mrs. Crocker. Come on, darling.
Well, I didn't think she'd have waited for us.
I only hope she knows the words as well as she says she does. Well, hello there.
I decided to wait in your car. It was more comfortable.
That's all right. Hop in, Flo.
Yes, all right, darling. All right.
Good. How did you know which car was ours, Mrs. Crocker?
I just guessed.
Well, here we go.
May I suggest that you turn left at the corner and proceed up Main Street for a mile and a half. The state highway begins once.
Looks as though we'll have no need for that map with you in the car, Mrs. Crocker.
I told you I know the way. Is your boy very ill?
Wait. How did you know about
it? Oh, I believe you mentioned it to the desk clerk.
We did?
He seems to be hurt very badly, Mrs. Crocker. That's why we're so anxious to get home just as fast as we can.
Incidentally, we live in Thornton, about 50 miles north of St. Joseph. We'll drop you off at St. Joseph if you like.
That won't be necessary, Mr. Gaines. I happen to be going to Thornton myself.
Oh, really? You live there?
No, but I have business there. And I guess it's just as urgent as yours. This highway leads halfway through the mountains. Keep turning left at all the intersections. I'll tell you when to branch off.
Fine. Well, you certainly know your way around, Mrs. Crocker. I've hardly seen you even glance at the road signs we've passed.
I've no need for road signs, Mr. Gaines.
How do you feel, darling?
Oh, a little better, darling, now that we're well on our way.
You know, we were very foolish to get so panicky. Everything's going to be fine. I can feel it.
You see, Mrs. Crocker, Martin and I were taking a short vacation when we heard the news concerning our son.
Yeah, first vacation I've had in 4 years, too.
Oh, too bad it's been spoiled.
I don't care about that. Just let that son of ours pull out of this and I'll be the happiest man alive.
Do you consider that to be a lucky distinction, Mr. Gaines?
What?
The expression you just used, the happiest man alive. I wonder exactly how much pleasure that encompasses.
I'm afraid I don't quite follow you.
Well, is life so wonderful? I'm afraid the human race doesn't have a proper appreciation of death. It seems...
Mrs. Crocker, would it be all right with you if we talked about something else?
I'm sorry.
Looks like running into that stone they told us about, darling.
Well, you'd better drive carefully if it starts to rain, Martin.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, darn it, I hate to slow down every minute count.
You could drive as fast as you like, Mr. Gaines. You'll be safe enough.
Yes, but these turns are a little tricky. Wouldn't do anyone any good to get us killed.
I doubt very much if that would happen while I'm around, Mr. Gaines. You'll take it as long as I show you the way.
Sure we will be. You're not nervous, are you, Flynn? Let me know if I'm going too fast.
No, I'm all right, darling.
Well, if it's okay with both of you, I'll keep this pace.
Don't worry about me, Mr. Gaines. I'm just as anxious to get to Thornton as you are.
You better put that window up, darling.
All right.
Getting hard to see, even the wipers working.
You be careful, Martin. There's a left turn about a quarter of a mile from here. Watch for it.
You can even recognize the landscape in this rain.
Martin, when you make the next stop for gas, maybe we can call home again?
Yes, darling, we'll try.
I wouldn't advise it. You'll probably find no change in the boy's condition.
Why do you say that, Mrs. Crocker? His injury is the type that reaches a crisis. And it's still too soon. But you don't know anything at all about his injury.
No.
Martin!
I didn't see him. I didn't see him till I hit him.
What was it?
The dog. He's back there on the road.
Don't bother to go back to him.
Well, he may be suffering. I can't leave him there like that.
I'll go with you, darling.
The rain's getting up a little. It's still very dark, though.
Look, there he is, Martin.
What?
Back there in the middle of the highway.
Ah, that poor devil, the wheels passed over his body. I felt the bump.
You really feel so sorry for him.
I don't see anything to smile about, Mrs. Crocker.
Don't you have any sympathy?
That poor thing, it looks as if he's dead. Yes, and perhaps we can bring him into town and drop him off at the police station. So...
Martin, look at Mrs. Crocker.
He's walking toward the path.
Martin, the dog.
She's getting up. I hit him full on.
He's walking away as if nothing had happened.
Perhaps we'd better be on our way, Mr. Gaines.
I... Yes, I didn't hit him after all.
It just might have been his time, Mr. Gaines.
Get back in the car, darling.
It's all right, dear.
Yeah, well.
That left turn I spoke about is right around the bend. What did you do to that dog, Mrs. Crocker?
Hello.
I saw her touch him. He was lying there, dying. But he got up when she touched him.
Don't take it easy.
Who are you, Mrs. Crocker?
Just a traveler as you are. Anxious to arrive at her destination. Turn left here, Mr. Game. This is the road.
It's empty. We're making good time, Flo. Flo?
He's asleep, Mr. Gaines.
Oh. She had a tough night.
Your wife is rather a nervous woman, isn't she?
No, not usually. You'll have to forgive that outburst before Mrs. Crocker. She's not herself tonight.
Oh, I understand.
See, this is the first time she's ever come face to face with death.
Oh.
I didn't tell her this, but they're afraid the boy has a fractured skull.
Yes, I do.
You know?
I could see by your manner that the case was rather serious.
The kid will come through, though. He'll lick the old reaper. I'm betting on him.
The old reaper? Is that your mental picture of death?
Isn't it everyone's?
Well, I didn't know the slander was universal.
Slander?
Oh, I've seen drawings. Amusing in a way. A grinning skull and scythe and bony fingers.
Death is always portrayed as a man. The joke in itself is always carried just as a computer.
You talk as if death actually existed as something you could see or touch.
Well, don't you believe that?
Of course not.
And what is death? Tell me how you imagine it.
Well, it's a state of being, something that... Well, something that just happens, that's all.
You seem very vague about it, Mr. Gaines.
Why shouldn't I be? Who knows anything about death?
Those who've met her do.
Did you say her?
Why not?
But it's not a woman.
Are you sure?
No, I'm not sure. How did we get into this subject, anyway?
Well, it's an interesting topic. Please continue.
Oh, I'd rather not.
Just as you say.
Mrs. Goggin?
Yes.
Do you mind if I ask you why you're going to Thornton? You don't live there.
Only temporary, on occasion.
Oh? I know everyone who's ever lived in that town. I've never even heard your name mentioned.
Oh, yes, you have, Mr. Gaines.
He has not, and neither have I.
But darling, I thought you were asleep.
We've never heard of Crocker, and we've lived there 20 years.
But what's in the name?
Martin, stop the car.
Flo.
Stop the car, Martin. She's getting out.
Yeah? This time of night?
I don't care what time of night it is. Get rid of her, Martin. She frightens me.
Oh, darling, it isn't really fair to do that. We can drop Mrs. Crocker off at the next town, perhaps, but not here.
Why don't you do what I ask, Martin? Why don't you? I can't stand her riding with us, but I'm your friend, Mrs. James. I may bring you luck.
If you don't stop the car and get it,
well,
I will.
Don't touch that wheel!
Martin?
Yes, darling. You're right.
Yes, I think so.
Good. Mrs. Crocker?
Do you know what happened?
Yes, we turned over twice. Car's back on its wheels.
Try starting your motor.
That's impossible.
The ditch levels off of the road a few yards down. You can get back on the highway if you try.
I can't believe it. We should have been killed. We have even been scratched.
Didn't I tell you before, Mr. Gaines, that I might bring you luck?
You say this developer turned all the way over twice and landed back on his wheels?
Yes.
Oh, you must live right, mister. You should have ended up in a hearse.
Martin, maybe. I just called home. It's the nerve chamber.
How far are we from St. Joe?
Oh, about 200 miles.
What's the road like?
Straight highway, McAdam. You leave the mountains about 10 miles up.
Martin, she's gone inside for a cup of coffee. We can leave her here. We can't get lost anymore.
Get in poke with it.
Yes, all right.
Hey, wait a minute, mister.
Here's your money. Just get out of the way, will you?
Hey!
There she is. She's standing near the door. And she's smiling.
Hey!
The dawn should be coming up pretty soon.
Oh, how much farther, Marty?
7,500 miles. What do she was?
I don't know, and I don't care. She's gone now, that's all that counts.
Why did she frighten you so, darling?
Well, the way she talked, the way she smiled. There was something about her that wasn't human.
You know, I'm beginning to feel a little guilty about her.
Why?
It wasn't very nice to leave her stranded at that station. Can't understand why we did it, Nora.
But you felt the same way about her as I did.
Yes, I did, you feel, darling.
I told you. It was like riding with a mad woman. The way she talked about death. Well, you were afraid of it yourself, Martin.
Yes, I suppose I was. But why? That's what I can't understand. Now that it's over.
Oh, well, maybe we were a little silly about it. But she's gone, so we may as well forget about it.
Did you say she was gone? Look up ahead at the bend of the road.
Well, she's standing there, Martin. Martin, don't stop. For heaven's sake, don't stop.
Did you see her face in the headlights?
Yes.
She was smiling again.
Mrs. Crocker is a very mysterious lady, isn't she? Let us see if time will reveal any more about her. Darling.
Yes, darling?
We're home.
Oh.
The lights are still on in the house.
Be careful, darling.
Here, I'll take my arm. There we are.
Wait, Martin.
What's the matter?
On the corner.
The corner's empty?
I almost thought I saw her again.
Oh, darling, don't be silly. We made the last 50 miles in 1 hour flat. Nobody passed us on the road.
Yes, but how did she get ahead of us?
Well, she probably got a lift, darling. Anyway, forget about her. We've got something more important on our mind.
Yes, darling. Here, I've got the key.
Thanks. He's probably upstairs.
There you are.
Oh, Dr. Carter.
I'm glad to see you both.
How is the doctor?
Very weak.
Oh, Billy, I'm going up to see him.
You can't go up now, Mrs. Gaines.
I can't?
Your son is still in the coma. The nurse is with him.
How does it look, Doctor?
Next few hours, or even minutes, may tell the story. We've taken x-rays and done everything we can.
Would you stay a little longer?
Of course. May I call my office?
Yes, certainly.
The phone's inside.
Oh, excuse me.
Certainly. Sit down, darling. Now try to relax.
What did he mean when he said the next few hours or minutes may tell us the story?
Don't you know?
Oh, Martin. Martin, honey,
he's still got a fighting chance.
Martin.
Okay.
Don't come, Martin. Don't come to the door.
Fly.
It's that woman. It's that horrible woman. I know it is. Don't let him into the house. Martin.
Darling, I've got to answer it. The doctor may have ordered some drugs.
No, don't do that. That's all, Martin.
Take it easy, honey. There's nothing to get excited about. We're home. This is our house. We're not on a lonely road in the mountainside anymore.
Martin, I beg
you. I'll be right back, darling.
Good morning.
What are you doing here, Mrs. Crocker?
May I come in?
I don't know how you found us, Mrs. Crocker, but you'll have to leave.
Is the boy upstairs?
Stay where you are. Do you hear?
Don't move, Mrs. Crocker. Good morning, Mrs.
Hello. What are you doing with that gun?
She's not going up to Billy's room. Perhaps I can do something for him, Mrs.
I said you're not going up to Billy's room.
Well, for heaven's sake, darling.
Now I know who she is, Martin. And I should have known from the beginning.
You're being very foolish, Mrs. Gaines.
Now I know why she's been following us. And I know what she wants.
No, give me that gun.
Keep away from me, Martin. Would you really kill me, Mrs. Gaines?
With pleasure. To save my son, I don't believe
you. No, don't
be silly. Get out of my way, Martin. Get out of my way.
Well, why don't you shoot? This will be the last we'll see of you, Mrs. Crocker. I'll make sure of that now.
Oh. The gun. It won't.
It seems to be useless. However, I'm a reasonable woman. I've decided to leave after all.
Mr. Gaines,
yes.
May I see you for a moment?
Go ahead, Martin. I won't move from this spot until she leaves.
I'll be quite back.
It isn't often that I change my mind when I decide to make a call, Mrs. Gaines.
You said you were leaving. Why don't you go?
You might remember me to your son.
Get out. I never want to see you again as long as I live.
I assure you, Mrs. Baines, you won't.
Flo! Flo, he's come out of it.
What?
Billy, Billy, he's come out of his coma. The doctor says he's going to be all right.
Oh.
Oh, darling, darling. You'll be able to see him in just a few minutes. That's my girl. Come on, pull yourself together.
I'll try.
That's my girl. Oh, did she go?
Yes.
Hey. Let's have it. Still holding my gun.
Take it away, Martin, please.
Oh, thank goodness it was empty. Darling, you must have been out of your mind.
For a minute, I didn't care. I'd have killed her gladly if it meant saving Billy.
But, honey, she wasn't responsible for his injury. Darling, for all we know, she might have just come here to help and...
Martin, am I going crazy? Oh, she isn't here anymore. I feel as if I just woke up from a horrible dream.
Oh. I want you to look at this gun.
Martin.
6 bullets. It wasn't empty after all.
Yes, time moves slowly, and most of us never seem to have enough of it to go around. There's always something else to accomplish, something new to do, and we scurry from one place to another to get it done. Minutes and hours form the very core of our lives, and we hoard them and save them as best we can. It's a valuable commodity to all of us. And the only one I've ever met who had a little to spare was Mrs. Crocker.
The Clock will be heard again next week, same time. This program is written by Lawrence Klee and starred Hart McGuire as the Clock. As Martin and Flo, you heard John Million and Joan Lord. As Mrs. Crocker, Neva Carr-Glynn, with Gordon Glenwright as the Doctor. The Clock, directed by John Saul, is a Grace Gibson Radio production.
This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Kalinda. Folk Tales from Many Lands by Lillian Gask. The Two Gifts. A heavy snowstorm was raging, and great soft flakes fell through the air like feathers shaken from the wings of an innumerable host of angels. By the side of the roadway sat a poor old woman, her scanty clothing affording but poor protection from the icy blast of the wind. She was very hungry, for she had tasted no food that day, but her faded eyes were calm and patient, telling of an unwavering trust in Providence. Perhaps, she thought, some traveler might come that way who would take compassion on her and give her alms. Then she could return to the garret that she called home, with bread to eat, and fuel to kindle a fire. The day drew in, and still she sat and waited. At last a traveler approached. The thick snow muffled every sound, and she was not aware of his coming until his burly figure loomed before her. Her plaintive voice made him turn with a start. "Poor woman," he cried, pausing to look at her very pityingly. "It is hard for you to be out in such weather as this." Then he passed on without giving her anything. His conscience told him that he ought to have relieved her, but he did not feel inclined to take off his thick glove in that bitter cold, and without doing this he could not have found a coin. The poor woman was naturally disappointed, but she was grateful for his kind words. By and by another traveler appeared. This one was driving in a splendid carriage, warmly wrapped in a great fur cloak. As he caught sight of the poor creature by the roadside, he felt vaguely touched by the contrast of his own comfort with her misery. Obeying a sudden impulse, with one hand he let down the carriage window, and he signed to his coachman to stop, and with the other felt in his pocket. The poor old woman hurried up to the carriage, a thrill of hope bringing a tinge of color to her pale and withered cheeks. "How terribly cold it is!" exclaimed the rich man, and as he took his hand from his pocket and held out a coin to her, he noticed that instead of silver he was about to give her a piece of gold. "Dear me, that is far too much!" he cried, but before he could return it to his pocket, the coin slipped through his fingers and fell in the snow. A rough blast of wind made his teeth chatter, and pulling up the window in a great hurry, with a little shiver he drew the fur rug closely around him. "It certainly was too much!" he murmured philosophically as the carriage rolled on. "But then, I am very rich, and can afford to do a generous action now and then." When his comfortable dinner was over, and he was sitting in front of a blazing fire, he thought once more of the poor old woman. "It is not nearly so cold as I thought," he remarked as he settled himself more comfortably in his deep armchair. "I certainly gave that old creature too much. However, what's done is done, and I hope she will make good use of it. I was generous, very generous indeed, and no doubt God will reward me." Meanwhile, the other traveler had also reached his journey's end, and he too had found a blazing fire and a good dinner waiting for him. He could not enjoy it, however, for he was haunted by the remembrance of that bent and shrunken figure in the waste of snow, and felt very remorseful for not having stopped to help her. At last he could bear it no longer. "Bring another plate," he said, calling the servant to him. "There will be two to dine instead of one. I shall be back soon." Saying this, he hurried through the darkness to the spot where he had left the old woman. She was still there, feebly searching amongst the snow. "What are you looking for?" he asked. "I am trying to find a piece of money, which a gentleman threw me from his carriage window," she told him, falteringly, scarcely able to speak from cold and hunger. It was no wonder, he thought, that she had not found it, for her hands were numbed and half frozen, and she was not only old, but nearly blind. "I am afraid you will never find it now," he said. "But come with me," he added consolingly. "I will take you to my inn, where there is a bright fire and a good dinner waiting for both of us. You shall be my guest, and I will see that you have a comfortable night's lodging." The poor old woman could scarcely believe her good fortune, as she tremblingly prepared to follow her new friend. Noticing that she was lame as well as nearly blind, he took her arm and with slow and patient steps led her to the hotel. When the recording angel wrote that night in the Book of Heaven, he made no mention of the piece of gold which the wealthy traveler had given by mistake, for only a worthy motive gains credit in that book. But amidst the good deeds that had been wrought that day, he gave a foremost place to that of the man who had repented of his hardness and faced once more the bitter cold, that he might share his comforts with a fellow creature so much less fortunate than himself.
Okay, we got a little bit of a break here. Be right back. Dark Fantasy is a series that you're not going to hear a whole lot of here, because there are only 33 of them, produced in 1941 and 1942 from a radio station in Oklahoma City, WYK to be exact. It was done on a shoestring budget, which again wasn't really uncommon, and is perhaps not as much of a disability as one would expect. After all, this is radio, and what radio really required was good acting, and I think above all, excellent writing. And there was a lot of excellent writing in old-time radio. This particular program was able to rise above its financial poverty through a creative establishment of an effective, if spare, ambiance, which resulted in an excellent show that was in some ways quite well ahead of its time. It should be noted, too, that Oklahoma City was far from alone in producing its own successful series. In point of fact, many excellent programs were produced in places that today would seem surprising. As I said, the barriers to entry in radio production were and are much lower than for movies or television. I mean, much lower. All you need is a little equipment, a few talented people, and there is no shortage of talented people, and there was no shortage of talented people in the 40s and 50s, or now. New York and Hollywood have no monopoly on talented people. And I, for one, am very pleased that the tradition of radio drama does go on to this day. But this day we are going back to April the 10th of 1942 for a show from Dark Fantasy called The Edge of the Shadow.
Bed it down for the night.
Yeah. Oh, Hank, come over here a minute, would you?
Sure. Something wrong?
Yeah. Cow here seems to have hurt herself.
It's like a barbed wire cut.
Let's have a look. Yeah, you're right. It does look like barbed wire.
There's no barbed wire where this animal's been.
Oh, wire like that on your property, Mr. Fuller, is over south the road.
Yeah, that's right. This animal hasn't been in the south pastures for months. She's one of the animals I'm keeping up near the barn, grooming for the stock show next month.
Yeah, I know she is.
You haven't let her get out accidentally, have you, Hank?
Me? Why, no, Mr. Fuller.
You sure, Hank?
Yes, sir. You said you wanted all animals you brought in off the range kept inside the wooden fences. You're the boss. I wouldn't let any of them near any barbed wire.
It's mighty funny. Can't figure out no other way she could have hurt her leg like that.
Me neither. They're pretty bad, too. Deep.
Yeah, it is. I'll never be able to show her with a leg like this.
Sure too bad, Mr. Fuller. She's a nice animal, too.
Yeah, one of the best. I was counting on her boosting my score at the show.
Say, you don't suppose McCard could have done it, do you?
McCard?
Sure. He's pretty hard hit for good show animals this year. Had to sell off quite a few to pay his mortgage and meet the taxes.
I know, but McHarg's always been a good friend of mine. He wouldn't do a thing like that.
Well, he might. He thought it might help him at stock show. Needs that prize money pretty bad.
But McHarg's a stock raiser from way back. He couldn't hurt a prize animal if he had to.
Funny thing what some men will do for money, Mr. Fuller.
Look, Hank. I won't have you talking like that.
Well, I was just saying that...
McHarg's a good friend of mine. I've done him several favors lately. He wouldn't repay me by injuring one of my animals.
Well, all I know is she couldn't have cut her leg like that around the corral. Looks to me like it was done purposely. Here, better clean out that cut and wrap it up.
Yeah. Fetch me that disinfectant and some of those clean rags from the chest, Hank.
Sure. Here's some right over here.
Hmm? In the stall?
Yeah, here on this shelf.
What are they doing here?
I don't know.
Well, this bottle's always kept in the chest at the end of the barn. Marsh, have you been treating this animal?
No, I didn't know she was hurt till you told me.
Some other animal, then?
No, of course not. Didn't you inspect them all tonight?
Yeah, I did. This is the only cow that's hurt. But what's this disinfectant and these clean rags doing here?
Well, I just don't know, Mr. Fuller.
I put that bottle away myself last week. I treated a horse. I haven't used it since.
I haven't used it more than a month, I guess.
Somebody did injure this animal, then tried to treat it here in its stall. It must have been frightened away before he could use the medicine.
But who'd purposely cut its leg and then try to treat it?
I don't know.
No, neither did I.
Wait a minute.
Huh?
What's this? Look, look here.
What? It's a short length of barbed wire.
With blood on it.
Ned, you're right.
It was hidden under the straw. I just happened to pick it up with my foot.
Must have been in that last load of straw we brought in. She must have laid down on it and cut her leg.
Not that deep. Hank, there's been dirty work around here. Here, hold these rags. Fix up this leg.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Easy now, girl. Yeah, just take it easy. Better stand back, Hank. She's liable to get a little excited when... Hank. What's the idea?
Don't move, Mr. Fuller.
That gun. Put it away.
Not on your life. Lucky for me, your foot didn't kick it up from the straw, too.
You did this.
I don't deny it. Yes, I injured the animal. I hid the barbed wire beneath the straw and this gun, too, to make it handy.
Hank.
And I put the disinfectant here in the stall so you'd work on the cut. And I'd have you right here where I want you.
Hank, why?
Why? Why? You mean you don't know?
I certainly don't.
Because you won't give Martha what she wants.
Martha?
Your wife, Mrs. Fuller.
Won't give her what she wants.
Divorce. Divorce. Now, stop your pretending.
Why, she's never asked me for a divorce.
She has a dozen times.
What makes you think so?
She told me.
Told you?
I told you to stop pretending. You know she wants to marry me.
What?
Don't act so amazed.
I am amazed. I'm glad to know about this.
You've known about it for a long time.
And I assure you that I haven't.
It's no good acting that way, Mr. Fuller. You've had a lot of fun, haven't you? Letting me go on like this, working for you for peanuts, calling you mister, doing all your dirty work around the farm.
You've been well paid. I've never asked you to do anything that I wouldn't do myself.
Well, I'm putting an end to all of it right now.
Hank, give me that gun.
Not on your life.
You can't shoot me in cold blood. They'll get you.
Not me. They'll never know.
When they find me with a bullet in me, Hank...
They'll never find a bullet in you. They'll never bother to look for one. Don't you remember this cow? Take a good look at her. You remember last fall when McCard's shotgun accidentally went off near her?
How she almost trampled him to death?
Hank, no.
One shot, fella, through your heart. By the time that animal's hoofs have done their work...
No, Marsh, no.
They'll never recognize you when they pull you out of her stall.
You can't do that.
They'll never bother to look for a bullet.
Listen to me, Hank.
They'll think your gun went off accidentally, and the animal trampled you to death.
Give me that gun, Hank.
And the farm will be Martha's and mine.
Give it to me, Hank.
Keep back.
Give it to me.
Keep back, I say.
Take this. Oh! Help me!
My eyes. You blinded me.
Take it easy, you yellow pup. Your eyes will be all right.
Water! Water, get me some water! My eyes are stinging.
They'll be all right. Come on with me.
I can't see.
Here, this way.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to take you to the well and bathe your eyes.
You're not going to kill me.
Careful. Here's the barn door.
I didn't know what I was doing, Mr. Fuller.
Easy now.
I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't want to kill you.
You only missed killing me by a hair's breadth.
Oh, I was out of my head. Oh, my eyes.
We'll talk about that later.
Where are we? Where are you taking me?
Over to the well.
Mr. Fuller, what in the name of heaven are you going to do to me?
I'm going to wash out your eyes. Come on now.
Yes, water.
Easy now. No, don't rub them. Keep your hands away from your filthy face.
But I can't stand this pain.
You'll be all right in a minute.
I can't stand it. I tell you, I can't stand it.
Marsh.
Let go of me. You're taking me off to leave me someplace to die.
Stop it. Stop it.
Now you're trying to kill me.
No, I'm not trying to kill you.
You are. I know you are.
Don't be a fool.
I'm blind. Sure, this is your chance. Chance to get rid of me. Well, you're not going to do it.
Hank, for the love of heaven, listen to me.
No!
I'm only taking you to the well.
Throw me in, huh? You want to throw me in?
I want to wash out those eyes.
No! You don't care about me. All you want is a chance to do away with me.
No, you rat. I'm only trying to help you.
Let go my arm. Let go my arm.
No, you're staying with me.
I won't do it. I won't be led like an animal to the slaughter. Let go of me.
Stop it.
Let go my arm.
We're almost to the well now.
Oh! Oh, my eyes.
No, water will fix them up.
I'm not going near that well.
That disinfectant will burn those eye tissues if you don't get it washed out of them.
I won't. You're going to throw me in. I won't go near that well.
Hank.
I don't. I won't go near it. I won't go near it. Hank, no. Oh.
Now.
Oh.
Get up on your feet. Come over to the well and get your eyes washed out.
Oh.
Now keep your head.
Oh, my eyes.
Here now. You bend over this water trough. Come on, bend lower.
Mr. Fuller.
Come on now. Get plenty of this cold water into your eyes. That's like it.
Oh.
A little more. Here, use this cloth. Soak it with water.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Lucky that was just a mild disinfectant. Oh. Won't bother you any. I'll put that up to your eyes.
Oh.
That's it. Now, can you open your eyes?
I don't know.
Well, try.
Yeah.
Feel better?
Uh-huh. Burns easing up.
Yeah, let's see him. Yeah. Just inflamed a little. That'll be all right. I'll go into the house and bathe him in warm water now.
You didn't have to help me.
Skip it. Come on.
Wait a minute. What's that noise?
The New York plane.
What's she so low for?
I don't know. She's too low.
What's wrong with her?
Good Lord. She's on fire.
On fire?
Yes.
A mass of flames.
Fire!
Falling.
Stephen.
Falling.
Stephen.
Falling.
Wake up.
Falling. She exploded in midair and now she's falling.
Stephen.
Martha.
Oh, heavens, Stephen, you've been having a nightmare.
I've been asleep.
screaming at the top of your lungs about something falling.
The plane.
Plane?
The night plane to New York.
What about it?
She was low. Too low. She was in flames. Exploded in midair.
Oh, you were dreaming. The plane did go over just as you began to scream in your sleep.
Oh, let's see the clock. Yes. She goes over at the same time each night.
And she was extra low tonight. The motors were awfully loud. Close.
Yes.
But there was no explosion.
A dream. Yet so real.
Oh, you better go back to sleep, dear.
But that wasn't all of the dream.
Oh, you can tell me all about it in the morning,
no,
dear.
That wasn't all.
Stephen, where are you going?
To Hank's room.
Why?
No, where's that other slipper? Yeah. Here.
Stephen, what's wrong, dear?
That's what I want to know.
Stephen!
Hank! Hank, open up! Hank! He's not in here. The bed's not slept in.
Stephen, what in the world's wrong with you?
Hank's gone.
Gone? Well, he hadn't been in his bed.
No. Did he tell you he was going anyplace?
No.
That dream. It couldn't be true.
Was it about him?
Yeah. About him. We were together in the prize stock barn, bedding down the animals. One of the prize cows had cut a leg. We couldn't understand it because she hadn't been near any of the pastures with barbed wire. I was bringing Hank up here to bathe his eyes. Just as the plane was flying over. She was too low. And she caught fire. There was that awful explosion.
Oh, but it was all a dream.
Come on, we'll see.
Stephen.
I'm going out to the barn. Come along if you wish. Something tells me that it was more than just a dream.
Stephen, this is so foolish. I tell you, it was just a dream.
Here. Do you hold this lantern?
Oh, but you need your sleep, dear.
Get this door. I'll take it now.
All right.
Come on. Here's the stall. You bring the flashlight?
Here.
Here, take the lantern. Confound it, what's wrong? The battery burned out? Oh. There. Martha, look!
Stephen.
There on her leg. A deep cut.
Fresh cut. It needs attention.
Martha. It's identical to the injury in my dream.
Oh, Stephen, surely.
It is, Martha.
Oh, she just cut herself yesterday and you didn't know.
No. Oh, I always examine the prize stock in their stalls every night. Martha, this animal was in perfect condition when we went to bed.
Oh, but Stephen...
Wait a minute.
What in the world are you doing?
I'm looking through this straw, but... By heavens, look!
A short length of barbed wire.
Bloody barbed wire.
Stephen.
Just like the dream. The very same. There should be something else. Yes, here. Look.
A gun.
Hidden here in the straw. Here where he put it.
Who?
Hank Marsh, of course. Who else?
Oh, no, Stephen.
Yes. And look. There, on the top of the feed box. The bottle of disinfectant. Some clean rags.
Oh, but Stephen, you...
Just like the dream. Every bit of it is just like the dream.
But you couldn't have dreamed all that.
A hidden barbed wire. A cut on the cow's leg. The hidden gun, the medicine, all the same.
Stephen.
And this cow. She's the one that almost trampled McHarg to death last fall when his shotgun accidentally went off.
But surely you don't think Henry Marsh planned to kill you.
Yes, he planned it. Worked it out carefully. Very carefully. But now his plan's no good because of that dream.
No, Stephen, he couldn't have.
Yes. And in my dream, I saw how it was all going to work out. I was shown how I could save myself by throwing the disinfectant into his eyes.
I tell you, there's some other explanation.
Then a plane. It did fly over low tonight, you said?
Yes.
And it must have caught on fire. It must have exploded.
But it couldn't have. I didn't hear a thing except the motors.
You heard me screaming about it in my dream.
Yes, but you...
Well, you must have been so intent upon what I was saying that you didn't hear the noise of the explosion.
Oh, no, that's impossible.
It was over south of the road. Here, give me that lantern.
Stephen, you...
You go back to the house. I'm going to look for that wreckage.
Stephen?
Not a sign of anything out there in the field.
I called the airport. They checked the plane. It passed over Sheldon some time ago. That's miles from here toward New York.
Safe?
Yes.
There couldn't be a mistake?
No. The plane that passed over here while you were dreaming is almost in New York now.
I can't understand it. All the rest of the dream was true. All but the part about the plane.
No, just a dream.
The other things. The injury to the cow, the wire, the gun.
Didn't you say you lost your gun several months ago?
Yes, yes, I did.
Well, you must have dropped it in the straw when you stored it in the barn. It and the wire were thrown into the cow's stall purely by accident.
But the injury...
Stephen, both of us know how easily and mysteriously cows can injure their legs.
And the disinfectant.
Oh, you simply left it in there in the stall and forgot about it.
No, I couldn't have...
Well, are you going to open it, Stephen?
It's unlocked. Come in. Hank.
Holly, I'm glad you're up, Mr. Fuller.
Henry, it's late. You haven't been in your bed tonight.
I forgot to tell you I was going to town. Now, Mr. Fuller, well, that cow in stall 13, she's cut her leg.
Henry,
Well, I just happened to look at it. Looked in, found the barn door open, and... What's the matter, Mr. Fuller? Then why do you look at me like that?
Stephen!
You want me to come out to the barn, Hank?
Why, yes. That cow's leg's pretty bad.
A barbed wire cut?
You know about it?
And isn't the wire lying beneath the straw of the stall right now?
Mr. Fuller,
And isn't this the gun you hid under the straw?
How'd you find out?
Oh, Stephen.
So, it is true. You plan to kill me.
No.
Plan for the animal to trample me and mutilate me.
No!
Plan to marry Martha and get my farm.
Oh, no, Stephen, no, you're wrong.
No, I'm not wrong. You planned it together. Only my dreams spoiled your plans. Well, now you can be together.
Stephen, no!
Put that gun down!
Well, I'm going to send you. You can burn together.
All clear. All right, shut the door.
Confound it. 5 minutes late taking off. Why don't they get this thing into the air? I've been hiding all day, waiting for darkness. Waiting here to take this plane to New York. New York. They won't find me there. No. They're not going to find me there. I've been waiting. Waiting. Taking off. I'll be in New York soon.
Unfasten your safety belt now, Mr. Fuller.
You know me?
Yes. We always have a list of all the passengers. Let's see, you're going to New York.
New York? Yeah. Taking a little weekend trip.
Just up and left the farm for a weekend. Decided I needed a vacation.
Vacations are good for a person.
Yeah. I decided I need a little rest. So here I am. Funny thing. I dreamed about this plane last night. Yeah? She always passes over my farm about midnight. Dream last night, she was flying exceptionally low. Funny, too, because she generally gained quite a bit of altitude by the time she gets over my place. It was a queer dream. Thought I was standing out back of my house, and she went over just a little before the barn tops, and she caught on fire and exploded. Exploded right there in midair, right over my farm. I guess we all have funny dreams sometimes. This one was sure real. But look, there's my farm down there now. See? Had a red light put on my windmill so it could be seen at night. And look how close it seemed. How close? Too close. We're flying too low. I said we're flying too low. Look, just above the barn tops, just like the dream. Just like the dream. No, it can't be that. Look out the window. Flames. What if the motor's on fire? What if the motor's on fire? We're flying too low.
You have heard The Edge of the Shadow, tonight's original tale of dark fantasy by Scott Bishop, originating in the studios of WKY. Ben Morris was heard as Stephen Fuller, Eleanor Corrin was Martha Fuller, Muir Height played Hank Marsh, and Georgiana Cook was the stewardess. Tom Paxton speaking. Dark fantasy comes to you from Oklahoma City.
Okay, that's it. This is another Night Transmissions in the can. Oh, by the way, you should go to the website, nighttransmissions.com. Night Transmissions, just one word. And on that page, you'll find information about everything that was on the show. Well, nearly everything. Usually everything. Oh, and I don't mention this often enough. There's a phone number. A G-voice phone number. The odds of you getting through to me or any human being are rather remote. But it is a good place to leave messages. And I like it when that happens. The Google Voice number is 541-995-0594. Give us a call. In any case, just a thought. See ya.